Welcome to the Minor League Radio Podcast, your source for what to think. From politics to pro wrestling, pop culture to progressive metal, confusing rhetoric, chronic masturbation, religion, rashes in inconvenient places, and of course the gold standard in pornography criticism. Gather around now your digital player of choice and enjoy the musings of your perpetually confused host. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Gardner.
I bid you greetings, noble citizens. It is I, Jim Gardner, at the helm of the Minor League Radio juggernaut once again. Well, first off, some good news. The Minor League Radio podcast is now on iTunes. You can just go to the website for the link or search iTunes. I did. It works. Really. You know, I have to tell you, it took me forever to get this thing off the ground. When I lost my last job in radio, I was contemplating sending out MP3s of my shit in order to find another radio job. You know, a couple of problems with that. First, my parents are both in pretty bad health, and frankly, they need me around, so I feel a sense of duty to stick around and help out. Now, I don't say this to be all, look at me, I'm sacrificing my career to take care of my sick parents, where's my Nobel Prize? Not that big a deal, it just is what it is. Sometime I will share with you the tale of the shitstorm that is my life, but that time is not now. When I can tell the story without sounding like a self-pitying jackass, then maybe I'll give it a shot. Secondly, I fucking hate the radio business. I have always worked in small towns, and small towns mean small money, and you can't say anything cool, because you'll piss off a sponsor, and it's probably someone who's lived in the town for 50 years and known the owner for 40 of them. Everybody knows everybody, it's just more hassle than it's worth. And even on the minute chance that a big market station would hire me, I still wouldn't be able to talk about the things that I find funny and interesting. I mean, this is going to be one schizophrenic goddamn podcast. I want the kind of podcast that'll go from me talking about Russian MILF porn and how my penis chafes from too much having at myself, right into an analysis of the State of the Union address, right into my thoughts on how the Christian right needs to quit seeking political power and instead act how Jesus acted, and top it off with a rant on how Extreme is the most underrated band in rock history. That's the kind of guy I am, and that's the kind of podcast I want. Plus, I'm one of those non-confrontational types, so if a program director would tell me that I could or couldn't do something, I'd just be like, well, okay, I don't want to lose my job, so yes, master. Then I'd be miserable anyway, so thank God for podcasting. I can just go into my basement with my Bible and my guns, and, you know, my porn, say what I want, and put it out there for your approval. Either you like it or you won't, but I surely hope you do. So, I decide I want a podcast. First, I have to figure out how to record to my PC. Now, I'm a musician, too, so I think to myself, self, you write songs and shit, why not kill two birds with one stone and get something that you can use to both record your musical shit and do your podcasting? Now, I've got a good friend, Zach, who's very good at recording, and he tells me to just get Pro Tools. It's the industry standard, he says, the most stable platform, the most plugins, you know, like I know what any of that shit means. But I trust Zach, so I drop like $6 on Pro Tools and an interface for my PC. Now, I'm learning how to use this software, and I'm trying to record, but I get these goofy error messages that keep coming up and fucking with my flow. So I talk to my friend Zach, and he says, go to the Pro Tools forums. So, I go to the Pro Tools forums, and holy fuck did that make me realize what a technological retard I am. What chipset do you have? Do you have a 78 RPM hard drive? How much RAM you rolling? What's your computer model? What's this? What's that? I felt like Obama without a teleprompter. I realized that my computer couldn't handle the software, so I had to save my shekels and buy a computer that would, and I got a pretty good deal on eBay for a computer that was kind of specially made to run Pro Tools. So, but by the time I got the money saved and got the computer here and all that, I had to relearn the software because, like I said, I'm a technological retard. But I finally got Pro Tools working, I got the website up, and I got a couple of podcasts at it, yay, yay. Then a week goes by and I just can't get into it. I mean, Obama did the State of the fucking Union last week, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, where's the U-porn? You know, just because I haven't had a podcast up in almost a week does not mean I have been idle. I've gotten the podcast up on iTunes, like I mentioned, did a few things on the website and figure out how to do interviews on my PC, so there's some cool things coming with this podcast. You know, that and, you know, my job that pays me. So I can pay the bills and not live on the streets.
Stupid. A person below normal intelligence.
Now, in fairness, the State of the Union was lame. Because every State of the Union is lame. I'm always going to admit my bias. I come from more or less the right side of the aisle politically. But every year, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, the president says the same shit My way is going to lead America back into prosperity, blah, blah, yada, yada, pinata. I did, however, listen to the State of the Union, and believe it or not, I just happen to have a few thoughts on it. There are a bunch of fact-check articles on the State of the Union on the web that you can check out. I checked out like a dozen of them, and I just happened to get some help from the one by the Washington Post. But they all kind of say the same thing, so let's give a listen, shall we?
The Minor League Radio Podcast.
Once again, this is mostly from the Washington Post, mixed in with a few of my own thoughts. So here's clip one, Obama, State of the Union on the Minor League Radio Podcast.
For the first time in 9 years, there are no Americans fighting in Iraq. I'm in 2 decades. Osama bin Laden is not a threat to this country. Most of al-Qaeda's top lieutenants have been defeated. The Taliban's momentum has been broken. And some troops in Afghanistan have begun to come home.
Now, the killing of bin Laden, which Obama used to open and close his speech, is an achievement that few partisans would quibble with. But the story about Iraq and Afghanistan is a bit more murky. Yes, the U.S. troops have left Iraq, in part because the Obama administration was either unwilling or unable, take your pick, to extend a security agreement with Iraq. Since a U.S. departure, Iraq has descended into violence as the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has targeted Sunni opposition figures. The country at times appears to teeter on the edge of a new outbreak of sectarian violence. Meanwhile, the president's claim that the Taliban's, quote, momentum has been broken is a highly debatable claim. U.S. intelligence agencies, for instance, recently concluded in a secret assessment that the war in Afghanistan, quote, is mired in stalemate, and that the security gains from an increase in American troops, quote, have been undercut by pervasive corruption, incompetent governments, and Taliban fighters operating from neighboring Pakistan. According to the Los Angeles Times, other U.S. officials have dissented from the report's conclusions, but the dispute is an indication of how fragile any momentum may be. We continue.
We can either settle for a country where a shrinking number of people do really well, while a growing number of Americans barely get by. Or we can restore an economy where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same set of rules.
All right, this one's all mine. You know, I struggle mightily with the whole income disparity thing. You know, it does seem that the gap between the rich and poor is growing. And let's face it, Warren Buffett giving away 80% of his shit isn't going to make as big a difference to his lifestyle and ability to survive as me giving away 20% of my shit. But what does fair share even mean? You know, according to the National Taxpayers Union, a group that claims to be nonpartisan, the top 50% of earners already pay 98% of the taxes. Top 50%, 98% of the taxes. Is that fair? You know, and the 1%ers already pay close to 40% of the taxes. You know, I'm sorry, but that does not strike me as fair. Bottom line, you're not going to get a job from a poor person. They don't have the money to pay you. Duh. So unless you want the government to just hire everybody, which is a truly frightening prospect, you have to make it as easy as possible for rich fucks to hire people. It's just the way it is. All right, continuing. State of the Union, Minor League Radio.
In the 6 months before I took office, we lost nearly 4 million jobs. And we lost another 4 million before our policies were in full effect. Those are the facts. But so are these. In the last 22 months, businesses have created more than 3 million jobs. Here, they created the most jobs since 2005. American manufacturers are hiring again, creating jobs for the first time since the late 1990s. Together, we've agreed to cut the deficit by more than $2 trillion. And we've put in place new rules to hold Wall Street accountable so a crisis like this never happens again.
All right, the Washington Post writes, here Obama tries to inoculate himself from the inevitable charges by the eventual GOP presidential nominee that he has the worst job creation record of any president since World War II. All right, and we'll stipulate that all of these job creation claims are fairly bogus given how every president is at the mercy of the business cycle. but it appears to be central to our politics. As Obama noted, some 4 million jobs were lost at the start of his administration, putting him in a deep hole if he wants to show positive job growth, thank you very much, in his presidency. But nearly $1 trillion of stimulus was passed into law in February, and so the carefully phrased claim of we lost another 4 million before our policies were in full effect, well, that's a stretch. And that's because it took a full 9 months to run up 4 million in job losses, some 8 months after the stimulus was passed into law, and some 4 months after the official end of the recession, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics data. The 4 million losses before Obama took office occurred in the previous 9 months, not 6 months, as the president stated. Trying to change the focus from his overall job creation record, the president focuses on private sector jobs created since the recession ended. Those numbers are largely right, but they are relatively anemic given the depths of the recession. Note that he describes a loss of 8 million jobs, then mentions a gain of only 3 million. Obama does not mention that the Republicans forced him to accept $2 trillion in budget cuts during the debt ceiling impasse, and he says, "We've put in place new rules on Wall Street," glossing over the fact that it had little Republican support, and the GOP candidates have all vowed to repeal the Dodd-Frank law. Continuing now, Obama says,
"No, we will not go back to an economy weakened by outsourcing, bad debt, and phony financial profits."
Again, the Washington Post responds that these are lines clearly crafted by political operatives. Few economists would blame, quote, outsourcing for the economic crisis, but it is also unclear how Obama has eliminated outsourcing during his presidency. Bad debts presumably would refer to irresponsible mortgage loans. Phony financial profits is also a bit puzzling. Perhaps it wasn't supposed to make sense.
On the day I took office, our auto industry was on the verge of collapse. Some even said we should let it die. With 1 million jobs at stake, I refused to let that happen. In exchange for help, we demanded responsibility. We got workers and automakers to settle their differences. We got the industry to retool and restructure. Today, General Motors is back on top as the world's number one automaker. Chrysler has grown faster in the U.S. than any major car company. Ford is investing billions in U.S. plants and factories. And together, the entire industry added nearly 160,000 jobs.
All right, here the president appears to celebrate a bailout, which actually was started under his predecessor, George W. Bush. The claim that some wanted the auto industry to die is a bit of a straw man, though. Obama appears to be really aiming at Mitt Romney's call at the time for the auto industry to go through a prepackaged bankruptcy, which Democrat attack ads have also turned into a heartless-sounding proposal. Ford, incidentally, did not accept a bailout. Some 200,000 auto workers were laid off during the recession, bringing the industry to a low of 550,000 workers. Forecasts suggest it will climb up to pre-recession levels by 2015.
A few weeks ago, the CEO of Masterlock told me that it now makes business sense for him to bring jobs back home. Today, for the first time in 15 years, Masterlock's unionized plant in Milwaukee is running at full capacity.
Okay, this is true. There's an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this month that explains that costs in China have risen because of labor unrest, higher shipping rates, and the weakening of Chinese currency against the dollar because of political pressure by the United States. Fair enough.
Right now, American oil production is the highest that it's been in 8 years. That's right, 8 years. Not only that, last year we relied less on foreign oil than in any of the past 16 years.
The first statement is a great statistic, but not really noteworthy because there has not been much change in the annual barrels produced in the United States since 2003. It essentially has been steady, though it is slightly higher now than in previous years, according to the Energy Information Administration. Production is projected to increase in the coming years. The second claim made it into Obama's first campaign ad, and as we've noted, it is lacking context. The Energy Department cited a host of reasons why foreign oil imports have declined, noting the main reason was, quote, a significant contraction in consumption, because of the poor economy and the changes in efficiency that began 2 years before the 2008 crisis. That's before Obama took office. It's Minor League Radio's analysis of the State of the Union address, and in our final clip, Obama says,
"Take the money we're no longer spending at war, use half of it to pay down our debt, and use the rest to do some nation building right here at home."
All right, this one is as close to a bald-faced lie as we're going to get. Now, you know the State of the Union is vetted and fussed over and reanalyzed and rewritten more than almost any other piece of oration, so finding an outright lie is going to be really, really difficult. But check out what the Washington Post writes. This is fanciful budget math. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were funded with borrowed money. Duh. So what Obama is really asking for is an increase in domestic spending relative to the Pentagon. The United States is still running huge deficits, so none of this imagined savings would, quote, pay down the debt until the United States once again begins running surpluses. Instead, his proposal would continue to add to the debt. Right, just like a Democrat. All right, I've had enough of the State of the Union. It sucks, and it will continue to suck until both parties get their heads out of their collective asses. Although, the Democrats need to do it more, of course.
Hell, I like you. You can come over to my house and fuck my sister.
Wear protection. The Minor League Radio Podcast is a known carrier of herpes.
I suppose the other big political story is the Florida primary going on even as I am recording this podcast, or we can call it Romney's revenge. He's been anally raping Gingrich in the debates, and he hasn't even had the common courtesy to use lube. It's a little tough to watch. Of course, Gingrich makes it easy with his rap about moon colonies and shit. You know, damn, just when I think Gingrich is the man, he has to go and step on his dick. He's gonna lose, Romney's gonna be the nominee, and if he keeps a fire in the belly like he's had recently, he might just win. You never know. Anyway, too much politics makes me want to eat a bullet. So, some lighter shit.
Gunga galunga. Gunga, gunga la gunga.
Tops at the box office, it's Liam Neeson and The Gray. You know, I'm beginning to think that Hollywood is soon only going to make movies that involve Liam Neeson kicking ass. I'm thinking this is how it goes in Hollywood. All right, gentlemen, we're not making enough money. What do you have for me?
Well, sir, there is a script by Jonathan Franzen. It's, really original. It would probably be an Oscar contender.
Fuck that shit. Get me Liam Neeson. Preferably kicking ass.
Well, sir, we had a Steven Seagal signed for this spy thing.
Steven Seagal is a pussy. He hasn't made a good movie since Under Siege. I want Liam Neeson kicking ass. But the spy thing is played out. We need fresh ass for Liam Neeson to kick.
We could stick Liam Neeson kicking ass in the woods.
The woods? I like it. With snow. And wolves. Yeah, let's run with it. Here's $100 million. Get it done. Rounding out the top five is Underworld 54. One for the money. I don't know what that is. Red Tails. That's about the Tuskegee Airmen. I want to see that. And Man on a Ledge. Apparently about a man on a ledge.
The Minor League Radio Podcast.
What's your most embarrassing caught in the act story? Well, whatever it is, one Florida mom can probably top it. 15-year-old girl called 911 to report that she could hear her mom having sex, according to a police report obtained by The Smoking Gun. The website reports that the girl, 15, told an officer that she wanted to go to a local shelter, quote, because she heard her mother having sex and, quote, felt disrespected by her 35-year-old parents' actions. That's just great. Disrespected. Oh, we're raising a bunch of self-entitled brats. I just weep for the next generation. Teen acknowledged that there was no form of abuse or neglect in the house. The mother explained to police that she had invited her boyfriend over and that sometime during the visit, her daughter heard them having sex and became upset. The woman added that their bedrooms are next to each other, and she didn't intend to wake her daughter up. Though it may have been a crime of passion, no one was arrested, the daughter eventually decided that she'd rather live at home, despite the cringeworthy noise, than go to a local teen shelter. One can only imagine the awkward silence around the breakfast table the next morning.
Mommy said, and Daddy
Demi Moore was doing whippets, a type of nitrous oxide inhalant, before she was rushed to the hospital earlier last week, TMZ reported. The troubled actress became semi-conscious and had symptoms of a seizure after inhaling a dangerous amount of nitrous oxide, a gas typically inhaled by young people looking to get a cheap high. A friend told paramedics who attended the scene, the gossip site reported. The 49-year-old was rushed to the hospital from her home in Los Angeles late Monday night before checking into a treatment facility on Tuesday to reportedly seek treatment for substance abuse. Her rep said that she was seeking professional assistance to treat her exhaustion and improve her overall health. However, friends of the star said she went to rehab because she is, quote, emotionally and physically exhausted over her painful split with Ashton Kutcher, who is, quote, acting like a teenage boy. What a shock. That, according to the New York Post. One friend told the newspaper that Kutcher, age 33, who was spotted partying with Brazilian supermodels on Monday, God, he's cool. He continues to flirt with women while still calling his ex when he's at a low moment. Not so cool. Demi was talking to Kobe Bryant at a CAA Golden Globes party, and Ashton came over and made a scene, the source told the newspaper. He made jealous comments to Kobe, then Ashton went to the bar and was openly flirting with other women. I gotta think that Kobe could probably kick Ashton's ass. I don't think I'd get in his face. Demi put up with a lot from Ashton, and despite the rumors, she always gave him the benefit of the doubt, the source continued. Now he's carrying on like a teenager, goes around with other women, and then when he's feeling scared and lonely, he reaches out to Demi. But doing whippets, that's mature behavior. I mean, I quit doing whippets back when I was fit. Well, okay, it was last week. But here it is. Demi Moore is fucking gorgeous. But she married a dude 20 years younger who's just as pretty, or at least that's what I would think if I were gay, as she is. And every hot starlet and cocktail waitress wants to fuck him. What did she really think was going to happen? Now, here's what Demi needs to do. She needs to do is start dating a little bit below her level. Like me, for instance. I'm below her level because she's really hot. But so she can attract these ultra-hot dudes. And if she wants to go younger, these ultra-hot dudes are also going to be lusted after by the hot starlets and cocktail waitresses. And it's going to be very, very, very difficult for them to keep their dicks in their pants. So to me, call me, and I'll make you happy.
You beast. You savage. Come on, bark like a dog for me.
More weird news now on the Minor League Radio podcast. Our critics are absolutely right. We are professional liars, said Everett Davis, founder of the internet-based reference store, which supplies pumped-up but false resumes for job seekers having trouble landing work. Davis and his associates are, he told Houston's KRIV-TV in November, ex-investigators schooled in deception and therefore good at fooling human resources personnel who follow up on the bogus work claims. Davis admitted he would even disguise a customer's past criminal record, but not if the job is in public safety, health, or schools. So at least the guy has substandards, which is a good thing, I guess.
The Minor League Radio Podcast.
And finally, a top state election official in South Carolina is disputing a recent claim that more than 950 people who voted in recent elections could actually be dead. Of the six names of so-called zombie voters her office was allowed to examine, all were eligible to vote. Thank God I thought the zombie apocalypse was upon us. The data checking came after the director of the State Department of Motor Vehicles, Kevin Schwedo, testified on January 11th that based on a DMV report, an estimated 950-plus dead people had voted since the day they had died. Election officials challenged that data, however, during a January 25th hearing on the issue, where South Carolina Election Commission Director Marcy Andino testified that some of the voters the DMV data said were dead were very much alive and were eligible to cast a ballot, according to the Columbia Free Times. This is classic, though. During the hearing, Myrtle Beach GOP Representative Alan Clemens said, "We must have certainty in South Carolina that zombies aren't voting." Well, yeah, I guess that's true. We certainly don't want zombies voting, but there's no such thing as zombies. Do we really have to state the obvious to a seated representative of our country? Oh, my God. All right, check out this riff. Oh, one of the coolest riffs ever written. Friggin' love this song. It's Arch Matthäus. This tune is called Stained Glass Sky. It's off the CD Sympathetic Resonance. Arch Matthäus, check it out. It is the shiz. And I think on that note, we'll close out this edition of the Minor League Radio Podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if you like it, tell a friend. If you hate it, tell an enemy. You can leave comments on the website. That is minorleagueradio.com. Or you can email me. That's Jim at minorleagueradio.com. Until next time, Zai Jin.